That's rolling.
Mm-hmm.
And this is saying, okay. All right, Steve, was your son waiting for you?
No, he showed up until Shabbat.
Where was he Shabbat?
At his brother's.
Oh, okay. But you didn't know? You wouldn't play anywhere you wanted?
No,
part of the Atmos Nefesh. Okay, today is Sunday, November 13th, 2011. My mother turned 98 yesterday. My mother was born, just think, 11, 12, 13.
Wow.
Okay? Now, I just want to begin this year. First of all, I want to say hello to my dear students in front of me. I want to say hello to the many who are listening. And I just want to respond. I got two she'ilot from London. Just briefly, lahalacha, interesting she'ilot. A young man named Avram Bienstock said, look, if you feel so strongly, men and women should sit together at a wedding. Al ken yazov, you based it upon a pasuk, aish et aviv imov, davak b'ishto. So what do you do with the Gemara and Sukkah, the whole sugya, you know, with the Beis Hamikdash, Nun Aleph, Nun Bet, the whole sugya, with the separation of men and women. So I just want you to know I answered him that that's talking about davening zmanei tefillah. And there, of course, 100% you need a mechitza. That Gemara, if you know the testimony at the Litwin, at Baruch Litwin, with the man Clemens Machleket and the Rav, that Gemara is very basic. There's more, but that Gemara is very basic. But I'll tell you something interesting. I was at a wedding Thursday night. My great niece got married. And these are Chadalim. All the leaders of the Chadali world were there. Many people that I know for decades. And it was fascinating to me. The chuppah, there's no ceremony, no nothing. They just stand up, go to chuppah. No separate. Everyone is around. And the meal has a tremendous mechitza. If you ask me la halacha, I would paskin just the opposite. The chuppah, where it's a davisha pigadusha, kosha bracha, there you have separate seating. That's what we had when we were kids. But the meal, and you should know, the yekkes had a wonderful way to have separate seating. Husband, wife, wife, husband, husband, wife, husband. So at one table, there were four couples, and all problems were solved. But Rav Breuer was very makpid that the younger people who are not married should sit together. He never allowed separate seating for the boys and girls who were not married. One final word in it that's an obvious thought. If all this hakpadar and matan sniyot and separation would lead us to more kedusha, I'd be the first one to sign up. But I hate to comment on all the scandals we have in the greater Torah world. The second question I got was fascinating. Remember I quoted to you a shiva from the Netziv, the Meshiv Dava, about this guy in Cincinnati giving an Aron Kodesh, and he wants Torah learning on a Sunday, and he wants to say brachat. So the Netziv said, of course, I gave you the reasons. But someone, I think it's the same Avram Bienstock, asked me, why didn't the guy say Birchat HaTorah? In other words, wait from the morning, the three brachot, let him say that in public. By the way, that's what the feminists say. The feminists who do not accept Reb Moshe and the Rav, so they'll have Aliyah LaTorah, and the woman will make Birchat HaTorah that she didn't say in the morning. I want to tell you, in theory it may be possible, in practice it's absolutely not possible, for one simple reason. Once you daven shachris, even if you didn't say Birchat HaTorah, yotze v'dava rabba b'diavad, you follow me? So the woman was already yotze, Daniel, so how can she say Birchat HaTorah? Now, I want to dedicate today's shir to Rav Natan Zvi Finkel, the Mira Rosh Yeshiva. A lot has been said about him. I actually know the family quite well, and I actually expressed personal condolences to his relatives in America who are in my book, The Turtz Family, T-U-R-T-Z. There's a picture of me with Reb Beinish, with Reb Natan Zvi's father-in-law. That picture at the Kotel was taken at the bar mitzvah of one of the Turtz boys. And you see what's amazing about Reb Natan Zvi, he was like Reb Aaron Soloveitchik. They both came from Chicago. They both suffered from grievous illness for many years, and they didn't let the illness get them down. And you got to say kala kavod to a person that had Parkinson's and was in a wheelchair, and he continued to build and build Mir. And I need not tell you, Mir, six, everyone debates which yeshiva is bigger, Lakewood or Mir. The truth is about both of them already, the yeshivat within yeshivat within yeshivat. If you know the way Mir functions, and here's a picture of me standing in front of the entrance to Yeshivat Mir with the Iron Lion, it's not one unit, it's many units under one. But it's amazing the avirah, the hasmadah, the learning, the Sfadim, the Ashkenazim, the Chassidim, the Litvakim, the Americans, the Russians. You hear every language under the sun. And what can we say? He was an example. A normal American kid, everyone has jumped on the fact he went to a co-ed high school in Chicago, and he was known as Natty Finkel. And if you read the websites, he got off the train with a lady that he knew from high school, and he walked her home. She shouldn't walk alone. I mean, he was just said that he was a normal American kid, but he came after high school, started learning, and never looked back. And he married the Rabbeinu's. The Rabbeinu's had four daughters. All four married American young Talmidei Chachamim. Okay, so in memory of the Mir Rosh Yeshiva, a lot has been written. If you saw the weekend papers, it's kedai to read about him. Another great person who had impact in America to a certain degree also died, but his death was sort of lost because within hours the Mir Rosh Yeshiva died, and that is Reb Dov Schwartzman. Rebbeinu I knew from Lakewood. He was Rebbaron's son-in-law. And there are many fascinating stories I can tell you. But he had a difficult life, and at many junctures, a lot of Atmos Nefesh. And even in death, it's just amazing that, I opened up Hashavua, the Haredi weekly paper. I don't know. There's not one word about him. It's like they put him in the chayim. Rebbeinu should be, I don't understand. I understand the why you person dies. Fine, they don't want to talk about it. But Rebbeinu, everything was on Rav Finkel. But dedicate the shiur to both their memories. Last week we spoke about, and very important, and we'll come back to it today with the Minchat Yitzchak again, that when it comes, by the way, Steve, you see what they just did? This is the new gizmo and this is the old gizmo. When it comes to Lotit Goldadu, so you see already from the Gemara and the Psak of the Rambam, and it's an amazing thought that Lotit Goldadu is only within one room. But if you have two different minyanim, there's no Lotit Goldadu. And halacha lemaisa, as much as it bothers me, I don't know what word to use, it bothers me perhaps spiritually, emotionally, but the concept of having in the Beis Medrash here a cholamoid minion like all Israelis, and 1 foot away in the auditorium, a tremendous Yontif Sheni minion. I mean, it's very confusing to the mind. Is it Yontif Sheni or isn't it Yontif Sheni? Are we in Israel or aren't we in Israel? But to say lo tidgodadu, that we cannot say. And this is why with the tefillin, there is a problem, because no minion in Eretz Yisrael puts on tefillin. So there, when you walk in with tefillin cholamoid, it may very well be a srach yisidir aitav lo tidgodadu. Okay. Number two, last week we spoke about the influence of Kabbalah, and I just want to say what I referred to at the end, that book that came out, that doctorate by a young lady who teaches in the university system in New York, and she, according to the review, the battle between Adler and between Nadler and who was the author? Do you remember the name of the lady? I gave away all the material. But anyway, the cold question of whether the Nodabi Yehuda was a Makubo, it dawned upon me afterwards. The next, what's her name? Sharon Flato. Right, thank you. Sharon Flato. And as I mentioned, I'm curious if she's, I've taught Flatos. There was Nebuchadnezzar tragedy where the Flato was killed by the Arabs. Lo aleinu, I taught her sisters. But there also was a Flato family in Mir. They were from the Shanghai crowd. It's interesting to know, she may be a granddaughter of that crowd. So she claims, according to what I read, that the Nodvi Yehuda was a Makubal. Remember I explained to you the difference between knowing Kabbalah and being a Makubal. It dawned upon me after Shia, Sunday night, a tshuva I did years ago when I did Chassidus and I did an old Yehudis tshuva on whether you're allowed to say L'shem Yichud K'tshav Berichu. And the old Yehuda was so strident against it, it's unbelievable what he said about the Chassidim. So I stand on what I said last week, that one has to differentiate between knowing Kabbalah and being a Mekubal. There's Kabbalah Iyunit and there's Kabbalah Masit. And anyone who claims the Rav was a Mekubal, I believe, doesn't know what he's talking about. And the story I told you with the apple is a classic story. And that's the version I heard. Again, people, I heard a garbled version that the Rav said to the kid. You know, remember the story with the apple? Saturday night in Boston at the Shear, some Ramaz graduate who was at Harvard. You know, this is, you can imagine how much this kid loved the Rav, and the Rav loved him. This was mamish in the Rav's backyard, and Ramaz and Harvard. And the kid comes over to the Rav. This had to take place in the 70s. And the kid comes over to the Rav after the Saturday night chain. You know, the kid is all inspired. And he says, Rabbi Soloveitchik, can you give me a bracha? So the Rav says to him, what are you, an apple? So, you know, that's the version I believe to be correct. There's another version floating around that the Rav said to him, what, am I an apple? But that doesn't make sense. The kid wants a bracha from the Rav. So he has to be the apple, not the Rav. But either way, you get the message. And I stand on it. And, you know, research is research. And you see all the articles about the Rav in these compendiums that have come out. Some are excellent and some are simply trash. People who never knew the Rav don't understand the Rav, can't comprehend his background, who he was, where he functioned, and it's just beyond words, some of the foolishness. And other articles are fabulous. Now, so last week we dealt with Reb Chaim Sitton and the Eretz Chaim, and that's the best shiver I know on all the Shinim and Hagim in Eretz Yisrael. And he goes one by one by one with davening, with all the differences, Kabbalah, Masid, Halacha Lamaisa, what we say, what we don't say, what we do, what we don't do. But Halacha Lamaisa, he takes the tolerant attitude that as long as there are two communities, two Batei Knesiot, each one can do what it wants. When it comes to marriage, the woman has to follow the husband. And finally, last week, I showed you Rabbi Yechiel Michal Tukachinsky. And I stress the fact, not all poskim are universally accepted. You all know very well when it comes to Yom HaTzmud, you can argue from today to tomorrow, but everyone's hashkafic brand of outlook influences the psak. And not everyone is accepted. Who we will accept, they don't accept. Who they accept, we don't accept. And kacha, that's the way it goes. You take Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, everyone looked up to Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach. I hold that Rav Moshe Weiss, I'm now listening to him with the Halacha Sheyurim, he is fabulous. The man is so knowledgeable and so broad and understands. And he, there's no, he's colorblind, you understand. He can see a kippah serugah, he can see a shtreimel. He's universally accepted. Rabbi Yechiel Michal Tukachinsky was universally accepted. He was beloved. I know people who knew him, you know, he was from Rabbi Shmuel Salant, from his family, from that type of outlook. And he was very close to Rav Herzog, and in the chief rabbinate, he was the expert on mathematics. How he knew so much and how he knew mathematics, I don't know. But these are people I wrote a didactic. Rav Shlomo Zalman, you understand, was a great expert in physics. He never spent a day in university. But it was told to me by eyewitnesses that you know where Tarasenko is, you know where Kikar Paris is, you know what I'm talking about, you know where the Malon HaMalachim is. And right next to that is the fountain that the city of Paris, I believe, gave Jerusalem. And it's called Kikar Paris or Kikar Tzafat. I've heard it referred to both ways. So right next to it is church property. After the War of Independence, when Mount Scopus was lost to the Arabs, so the Hebrew University moved to that building. They rented it for years. It could be even until today, Hebrew may have some offices there, I don't know. But for years, they had offices there, they had classes there. And when the whole university in 48, 49, 50, 51, it was a small Israel, a small university. It's not like today where they faced their 30,000 students. So I know from my witnesses, Rav Shlomo Zalman would stand on the corner when the students came out. He knew some of them. He would give them mathematical problems that he did, show it to your professor, and give it back to me tomorrow. Let me know what he says. And he was inevitably always correct on the most difficult mathematical problems. So, you see, with all due respect to Yeshiva University and school and teachers, I don't want to put teachers down. I mean, it's not nice to throw stones at your own calling in life. But a kid who's a genius is going to make it with or without a Rebbe. And you know what I always say, school, you go to school to develop social grace. That's what's important about school. But a genius is a genius, and Rav Tukhachinsky was in that league. And he too agreed the woman has to follow the man, period. Now, let's move on, and we come to something very fascinating, the Minchat Yitzchak. The Minchat Yitzchak, all of you know, Reb Yitzchak Yaakov Weiss, Hungarian, survived the Holocaust, winds up in Manchester, and becomes Av Beit Din of the Eid HaRedit in Yerushalayim. The Minchat Yitzchak was a posek mufak, even though he's with the Eid HaRedit. Certainly the first part of his life in Manchester, he was quite integrated in the general community. I always tell the story, and it's a true story, and I've been corrected on one fact, so I'll say it more correctly now. But when he was a candidate for the Eid HaRedit, for Av Beit Din, and they need someone of stature. They don't have anyone like him today, but they need someone of stature. So in the Eid HaRedit, they threw against him that he received Pras Rav Kook of Tel Aviv, I think it was, for the Minchat Yitzchak, for early volumes of the Minchat Yitzchak. So I remember when he got the press, he didn't show to get it, but I thought it was his daughter. A Talmud of his who's listening to the Shurim corrected me, he had no daughters. It evidently was a niece. I know it was a family relative. Maybe it was a sister, maybe it was a niece. She took the press for him. In other words, he didn't turn it down. So they threw it against him when he was Eid HaRedit candidate, but he was elected, and Kvodo B'Mkomo Munach, he's a giant of Torah. Now, what makes it very fascinating is who asked him this question. And I'm quoting now from Minchat Yitzchak Chelik Dalid, Siman Pei Gimel. The year is 1965. And the person who asked the question, should live and be well, was one of the well-known American Rabbanim, Reb Ephraim Greenblatt from Memphis, Tennessee. Did I say Nashville in the announcement, or did I say Memphis? If I said Nashville, it's a mistake. Memphis, Tennessee. How Nashville came in, I don't know. Okay, my apologies. Now, do you know who Rabbi Greenblatt is? I believe it's from a called the Riverboat Ephraim. They're two Greenblatts. I think they're cousins, and at times I get confused. But to the best of my knowledge, Rabbi Ephraim Greenblatt was a Talmud Mufak of Rabbi Moshe Feinstein. And he was the posek for that entire area. And he's his Sfarim and his Lundis, and Rabbi Moshe has endless hitkatvutito. You'll see the Igret Moshe time and again. Rav Moshe goes back and forth with him. And he turns to the Minchat Yitzchak here, and could you imagine, this is Memphis, Tennessee, and he says, recently, many Ashkenazim are marrying Sfadim, and they have tremendous nafkaminot, legabei basa, legabei pesach, devarim sheha Sfadim ochlim, and of course what he's referring to, legabei basa, is the old story that we who are Litvakin can eat regular meat. We don't need glatt kosher. In Lithuania, I've heard Eidet Nemana from my own Rebbe, Mori Rebbe, and others, that there was no such thing as glatt kosher. Glatt kosher developed in Hungary and in parts of Poland. But in Lithuania, everyone ate regular meat if it was kosher, if there was a sircha. If they checked the sircha, it was kosher, and everyone ate regular meat. And the svadim, of course, are makpid the Beis Yosef, that they have to have Beit Yosef meat. And I can tell you from the Rav, once said, and I've said this many times, but it's a new class, let me repeat it. The Rav had a good sense of humor. So, you know, generally speaking, when you learn Yoredeya, you take the attitude that the Svadim have it made, they're makil, they can eat. Svadim actually can have one set of dishes, if you know what I'm talking about, glass dishes. And the Gamanu, and they can eat the meat one day, milk the other day, they have it a lot easier than the Ashkenazim. So the Rav said, yes, that's true, but when it comes to glatt kosher, they have one chumrah that does away with all their kulat. In other words, they have to have Beit Yosef meat. They can't take a sircha. They can't take anything where there was a shayla on the lung, and it cost a lot more money. And that chumrah knocks out all their kulat. So that's one nafkamina. The other nafkamina, of course, is Pesach, where we all suffer, at least in Israel and Canada. I'm sure they don't have the problems we have here. But in Israel, you never know if it's a kitniyot, is it a kitniyot derivative, rice, can you eat rice? And all of you aware, if you've been here for a Pesach, it's unbelievable to see cans of beans, kosher le Pesach lefi minhag ha'eda. Cans of beans, nahit, and you take peanuts. No, it's rumored that there are chabatnikim. I know in my youth that the chabatnikim used peanut oil. It was never a shayla, and it's rumored other poskim held that a peanut is not a legume. Okay, it's a big problem. Exactly what are legumes? How do you define legumes? And you know, we've discussed it at length. How did the minhag begin? What are the boundaries of the minhag? So he turns to the Minchat Yitzchak, and how does the lady act? She marries, does she have to follow her husband? Now, there's a second part to the question that is very fascinating. And I have to laugh because Baruch Shekivanti Ledat Gedolim, Aaron Rakefet, what does he say? When a couple gets married today, he does not wish them mazel tov. Why not? Daniel, I wait 1 year to see if it survived. I had a Talmud in this classroom, a genius, who told me a few years ago, Rebbe, the day I got divorced, I was laughing because it was exactly 3 days before the year was up, he said. And he kept on thinking, you know, what I said to him, at the end of the year, mail, all right, give mazel tov. But to waste your breath when the couple is two selfish individuals who have had everything in life and don't know what the word compromise means, and they're getting married, Hashem Yerachem. So it's amazing here. The second part of the question is, what about the first year of marriage? Does she follow the husband yet? Or no? And you understand what's behind that. In other words, I understand what he's trying to ask. When does she really become part of the husband's community? And this is the question he asked the Minchat Yitzchak. So it's the Minchat Yitzchak makes an entire analogy. It's makom shenahagu. In other words, let me go and say it very openly and clearly and distinctly. Feminists may have a problem with this, but as I told you, the halacha has to function in society. And until recently, no one would argue with me when I would say that a young lady looks forward to getting married. And the concept of marriage is that she becomes part of her husband's greater family minhag gestalt. And when it comes to marriage, we know that a man, the name of the man, Levet Avotam, the Torah tells us when we count heads, we count according to the man's name. It's Levet Avotam. You have to have a bank account, you have to keep track, you have to know what's going on, ownership, so Levet Avotam. Torah, Judaism, goes according to the wife. You're only a Jew if she is Jewish. If not, she's not Jewish, you're not Jewish, plain and simple. And this was the division that the halacha set up. So when a girl is growing up, as many have touched up the Gemara, Nashim Daitin Kalat Aleihem, that women don't have such good minds. And by the way, it's very unfair to quote that Gemara, because if you're going to quote Gemaras, you're going to find at times they praise women, at times they put down women, at times they praise men, at times they put down men. You can find endless quotes in Chazal, because it represents people who are living life. So anything is possible. You find a shalom. Once in a while, you get upset, you say, all right, women daitin kalat aleihem. The same thing, and what about Chazal's, Chazal have terrible things to say. About men, I can't even quote it. Kolag adome chavero, yitzrok adome chavero. Can you imagine? I never could understand that until recent times. God have mercy. That's like saying Reb Moshe Feinstein and Mori Rebbe, Rav Soloveitchik, and the Lubavitcher Rebbe and Rav Avadya Yosef have a bigger Yetzirah than the average guy walking on the street. That's not a complimentary statement to Gedolei Yisrael. But Chazal, all right, they were upset. Something might have happened, like happens in the newspapers today in our life. People we know, or people I'm going to be with this coming Shabbos. Shem Yerachem. Okay, so you can't quote, but Nashim Daitin Kalat Aleihem. So the apologetics, they say, women want to get married. Daitin Kalat, not with a kuf, with a chaf. And this is the attitude. In other words, it's Makam Shenahagu. What does Makam Shenahagu mean? If you, that's the Gemara, we all spoke about so many times, the Gemara and Psachim, the whole sugya, and if you live in a community where they don't travel on Friday, then as long as you live in that community, you cannot travel on Friday. The minute you move to a different community, then if they travel Friday, and you're part of that community, you're allowed to travel Friday. Why people didn't travel Friday was, I don't have to tell you, if you know anything about New York and the stories going up to the mountains on Erev Shabbos, I'm not a fanatic, but boy, I'd be the first one, if I lived in New York City, the first one to paskin la halacha, form a base then of 100 talmidei chachamim. Could you imagine trying to get 100 people together who will agree that the other 99 are talmidei chachamim? Chaim, forget it. It's in theory. In reality, try to get YU graduates alone. Then YU with Lakewood guys. Oh my gosh. All right, maybe I could do it. Maybe I could pull off a miracle. I did pull off a miracle last week. There is someone sitting here who can testify. Anyway, be it as it may, I would be the first one to Asa driving up to the mountains Friday after 10 a.m. in the morning. Over the years, thousands of people have been Mechalel Shabbos because of the traffic, Route 17. I mean, you have no idea what goes on. They're trying to build a new highway now, and they say one of the reasons the politicians are giving is to solve the Friday problem for the Borough Park Jews. Okay, fine. So you see, if you belong to the community, you're part of it. You can't drive Friday. You go to another community where they drive, you can drive. So this is the way he views a woman's mindset. She wants to get married. When she's going to get married, she's going to be part of her husband's world. And it's makom shenahagu. She has to do what the husband wants. Now, what's fascinating here, he says, all this applies to all the various differences between Sfardim and Ashkenazim. But in the tshuva, and he quotes the Chatam Sofer, he quotes earlier, there's one difference that once you're part of it, you can never throw it away. It's like that chayrim, that takana, is not just on the blood in your body, it's on the person. And you know what takana that is? Chayrim de Rabbeinu Gashem, that you can't have more than one wife. And this question is, I come back again to what I've said so many times in different classes, in theological, philosophical outlook, halachic outlook. What you see is, once again, it's the strongest proof. Torah is given within a certain time. Still be given at that time, and the Kaddish Baruch Hu couldn't put into the Torah laws about computers, laws about an ATM. How can you run a religious bank? Bank Mizrahi, supposed to be a religious bank, right? Bank Poli Agudah. You have an ATM machine. Someone comes along Shabbos and pulls out money. Right? You follow me, Michael? Interesting. All right, you should know that in Israel, they have a tzomet, they tell me, in the frum banks, they put in a patent that it doesn't register till after Shabbos. Okay, you know, a grammar switch, whatever. Be it as it may. But Torah is given within a certain time. At that time, people had two wives, three wives, four wives, whatever you could support. It doesn't mean the women were unhappy. The women were very happy. I saw that with my own eyes when we came in Aliyah in 69. A family came in, I told you, from Persia, from Iran. And the guy had two wives. Our only problem, the Americans had a problem. You invite them to a simcha. How do you invite them? Yosef Halevi and his harem. Mr. Yosef Halevi and Mrs. and Mrs. They had two wives. And according to the law of Israel, if you come in with two wives, you don't have to get divorced. It's only here you can't have a second wife. But you see, the Ribbono Shel Olam gave us a system, and I'm now quoting the Rav, of course. I have it in my work on the Rav. That he gave us the ability that halacha has a history. And in that history, there's interaction with social, economic, historic developments. And that's what you call takanot, gezeirot, ordinances. And the cheirim, the Rabbeinu Geshem, was like we had matured into a different period. In other words, nowadays, when you, who here is not married? I got to find, oh, Michael, you're not married, okay? So Michael is going around, going on dates, and he gives the girl the line. Remember I told you the line I pulled in Machon Gold? After the Hitler period, we need children. I love you, marry me, but on condition I can have three other wives. That way I can have 50, 60 children, right or wrong. And the girl says, one girl said yes to me. It's an amazing story. I don't want to mention her name. Unfortunately, she was a Balak tribute. She's not from today. Not from. That's why she said yes. I can understand already. But 99% of women will say absolutely not, because a woman today expects out of marriage. It's a very different concept than it was 500 years ago, 1,000 years ago. You understand, Rabbi Lichtenstein plays Scrabble with his wife, okay? I'm not certain that Rav Chaim Brisker played Scrabble with his wife, okay? Although he had a wonderful relationship with Lipshitz. But it has to be understood in context. So you see, when it comes to Chayim, the Rabbeinu Geshem, it's right here in the Tshuva. Once you are part of a community where that chayrim is in the vogue, that can never change. And the lumdus has to be very simple. It's not just a chayrim on a community. It's a chayrim on you. And that's why, if you study the Rav, my work on the Rav was well known that he opposed cheter meir rabbanim. He opposed it. After he died, someone, Rabbi Wurzburger, wrote that the Rav was opposed to Cheter Meir Rabbanim, and I quote the Rav. I have it in my book with the source, everything. There has to be symmetry. If she can't remarry, he can't remarry. So a Talmud, the Rav out of the 70s, Rabbi Wurzburger was a Talmud out of the 40s. Rabbi Sauer, who is from L.A.? Rabbi Sauer in L.A. is a Talmud out of the 70s. He wrote an article saying, this cannot be, Rabbi Wurzburger. I have a footnote. I give you all the sources. Rabbi Wurzburger is wrong. Not wrong. The Rav felt that way. The Rav said it. And I have to tell you honestly, I only signed one Cheter Meir Rabbanim. I went against my Rebbe's will. It was a Talmud. It was a terrible story. My Talmud was not at fault. And that Cheter Meir Rabbanim I signed. But outside of that, I never signed the Cheter Meir Rabbanim in my mature years. When you're a young rabbi and they come around, and there are endless stories in America. It's a Reb Moshe and Heterim and people who misled Reb Moshe. Reb Moshe had to publish an ad withdrawing his signature. I don't know, I met so many people in my life. I dafka met the people involved in this very, very story. But this is what he says, that the Cheter Meir Rabbanim does not apply. Cheirim de Rabbeinu Geshem is what conquers all, and you can never have more than one wife, and it doesn't matter where you live and what community you are part of. But as far as every other aspect of life, the fact that she wants to marry and she and the husband are going to establish a home, then she has to follow her husband. Now, he raises another issue, and these may be part of the questions that Ephraim Greenblatt asked him, but you see, in the Gemara, you have so many different cases. So when you teach, remember I started teaching Gemara and Yeshiva in 62. So my students were face 13, 14, 15. So you have these kids, many of them went on, I have to say, I'm very proud. Many of these students are world-class Talmid Chachamim, world-class medical doctors, world-class acts today. And many live in Israel, and many are still in. I just faxed a student, Makarat, an hour and a half ago, a student of mine from the 60s. So you can see how many years we've remained in intimate contact. So when you have Gemaras, I don't want to go into detail, it's not nice, but a guy falling off the ceiling, remember the Gemara, Baba Kama, and what happens when he lands? It's not nice, I have to say it in public. No, did this ever happen? But these are principles. When you look up a code of law, you have endless principles. These are establishing principles, so you know what the principle is. So he evidently had a question like this, and this is unbelievable. A girl from Nashville, Tennessee, a girl from Memphis, Tennessee. I know I'm saying Nashville because there's a Rabbi Posner there. You can correct me if I'm wrong. The Chabadnik we once spoke together was a real Kiddush Hashem at the 1994 OU convention right after the Rav died and the Rebbe died, and it was a beautiful talk. I spoke on the Rav, he spoke on the Rebbe, and we both interconnected in our talks, I with the Rebbe and he with the Rav, and it was a big, big, beautiful Achdut Yisrael display. But coming back to Memphis, so the Shaila was like this. A girl from Memphis, Tennessee was in Israel, and she studied here for the year, and she met some fine Israeli young man and fell in love, and they get married in Memphis. And now they're going to come back to Israel, but they're not coming back for another half year. And lo and behold, while they're in Memphis, Rosh Hashanah, not a problem, 2 days, Yom Kippur, not a problem, 1 day. If I had my way, I would institute anyone not living in Israel has to fast 2 days. Like the Mira with the Shanghai. You know what I'm talking about, Chaim, in 41 in Japan, the dateline question? Anyone who was healthy enough fasted 2 days, 49 hours. I know people who fasted 2 days. God have mercy. But anyway, anyone not living in Israel, Clinton Park, 2 days for Yom Kippur. But anyway, 1 day Yom Kippur, not a problem. But Sukkot. Now, and the Minchat Yitzchak evidently paskins that if you're an Israeli in Memphis, you observe 1 day, the second day is Chol, you're part of the Israeli community. Excuse me?
Why is there a problem in Japan with giving national
dates? According to the Chazon Ish, you've crossed the dateline.
He didn't know what he's talking about.
You crossed the dateline. Take my word, it's all. You don't follow it. We have a different dateline, the Kuzari's dateline. Take my word for it. Believe me, I know what I'm saying. Of course, that's the whole machleket, where the dateline is. Right before Japan. You'll see there are maps that illustrate it. You're not aware what the Chazon Ish? This is 41? Was the tremendous.
Where did they come up with this idea of where the international dateline?
Because the Shaila came up, the Chazon Ish had written about it. Because my son-in-law Chaim gets mad at me that I paskin against the Chazon Ish. He says, the Chazon Ish is right, the Kuzari is right. I say, what do you mean they didn't know? The Chazon Ish knew mathematics, knew geography. It was the 18-minute question. So much is written on this, you have no idea. But halacha lemaisa, I passed like Rabbi Nachum Kasha, like Rabbi Chaim Michal Tukachinsky, and it was Amdu L'Minyan Kan, and more or less we followed the international dateline, because La Halacha, there is no dateline. In other words, the Torah was given without a dateline. B'moshvo Teichem, Shabbat is measured. Lo tamaru eish b'moshvo Teichem b'yom HaShabbat. Shabbat is measured by where you live. So if I ever get a shayla, and I've gotten shaylas, I always tell a tourist that the first week you're in Japan, don't do malacha, what is it, Sunday? In other words, keep one day, the real, one day l'chumra, but the real day keep like the local community. If you, already the second week you can keep like the local community. But it's a tremendous machloket paiskim, it's not a simple matter. Anyway, so coming back to Yontif Sheni, the Minchat Yitzchak Paskin that the Israeli doesn't keep a second day. You understand, like the Shulchan Aruch, it's only in public you can't do malacha. So now look at the situation you have. Chaim Yankel, or let's call him Chaim Yaakov from Yerushalayim. That's your name? Okay. Chaim Yaakov Bash from Yerushalayim has married a girl from Memphis, Tennessee. No, Yontif comes. They're going to go back to Israel in half a year. No what? You know, I've gotten shyless kids going back when I taught in BMT and taught college kids. You get these wise Alex. Rebbe, I'm coming in Aliyah right after I finish college. Why do I have to keep Yontif Sheni? Idiot! Many a funny thing happened to people who planned Aliyah. You understand he's coming in Aliyah. You know what they're planning. We all know people who went back to America for 6 months, and the 6 months turned into 60 years, okay? I can give you examples of that. So she never lived in Israel. Now comes Yontif Sheni. What does she do? And he, this is unbelievable. He paskins la halacha. She has to observe a total Yontif Sheni. So here you have a husband. He's putting on tefillin. He can cook, bake, turn on the lights, do whatever he wants. He can play with his computer, tune himself into the world, and she has to observe Yontif Sheni. And he brings down a halacha. Shaila was asked, and he quotes, that the husband is not allowed to daven in her presence. Do you know why? Because he's going to say a vachadik davening, a weekday davening. For her, it's yantif. I don't know why. I couldn't believe my eyes here. He can shaloli paleil tfilat yutchet. I mean, and this is a tremendous question. The Sri Deyesh. Who remembers the Sri Deyesh when in Montreux, if I'm pronouncing it right, Switzerland. There was a Rosh Yeshiva, Chashev Rav, visiting from Israel, and he was there, Yontif Sheni, and they wanted to give him maftir, and you give him maftir. He's observing one day. And here you're calling him up, I believe, or there was Chasen Torah they wanted to give him, whatever. It was Yontif Sheni that he's not observing. And the Sri Deyesh deals with it. And here he paskins la halacha. See, when I'm in America, it's not a problem because I observe 2 full days. So I'm like everyone else, basically. So you can give me whatever you want. It's not a problem. It's Yontif Sheni for me. But I told you, people, I was Pesach once at a hotel in America, and big Talmidei Chachamim came over to look at me. You're really only observing, you're observing 2 days? And they were looking at me like I stepped off the moon. Thank God they knew that the Rav paskin that way. So when I told them, look, I spoke with my Rebbe, what can I do? This is the Rav's psak, the Chacham Tzvi's psak, Rav Chaim's psak, the Chazalish's psak. I gave a Rav Kook's, I gave a whole list. So they knew the lundis. But halacha l'maisa to see someone who's observing, I'm Israeli, I'm living in Israel 43 years, and I'm observing 2 days, I just observed 2 days Shavuos in Los Angeles, right or wrong? So he paskins la halacha here, that could you imagine, this is a trick question. When can you have a husband and wife together in one bedroom? and the husband is observing one day Yontif, and the wife is observing 2 days Yontif. You follow me, Daniel? If you had Ora Bechinas in the yeshiva and you had to go before Mori Rebbe, Rav Soloveitchik, Rav Moshe Shatskis, and Rav Shmuel Belkin, could you imagine if the Rav threw this question at you? Wow. And here it is, Midchat Yitzchak. Fascinating, fascinating. Now, fascinating. Okay, now, then he says something else. And here too, you have to understand the Midrash Yitzchak. I've once analyzed this Shuvat, just very briefly. It's not the time now to go into depth, but Rabbi Avadya Yosef has made a case out of this very stridently and very vociferously. How do you paskin a shayla? How do you paskin a shayla? So you know, with Rabbi Moshe Feinstein, I told you, with the flying greenblatt, their classic example. Rabbi Ephraim Greenback on the question of Geirut, on the question of a woman who says she's willing to convert, she'll be Shomeret Shabbat, but there's only one problem. The man she's converting for is a Kohen. Nu, can a Kohen marry a Geirut? You all have this shayla all the time in the rabbinate. A Kohen can't marry a Geirut. Nu, and the woman says, if you don't let my sweetheart convert, I'm becoming a Gentile. And this shayla already came up in Germany 150 years ago. We've lived with the shayla time and again. This was the big shayla in the early 70s. What they write about Rav Yoshev and Rav Gorin in that newspaper I showed you last week, the shayla came up in Israel. It almost broke the government. It was an unbelievable problem here. Rabbi Frank Greenblatt had the shayla, and he writes to Reb Moshe, and he writes to Reb Moshe, and he cites some Malamed Lahoil, Reb David Zvi Hoffman, that he was lenient in a case like this. And you should know, when they published Malamed Lahoil and they republished Reb David Zvi Hoffman in Bnei Brak, among other tshuva, this too was left out. The art scroll world of intellectual dishonesty, which is frightening to me. But anyway, Reb Moshe writes back, impossible, can't be. And he says, the Malamed Lahoil HaSeifa no tachat yadi. And he won't even look at it, won't even look at it. And I've told you, Reb Moshe could have gotten the Seifa in 1 second flat. Because if you know the east side, MTJ is right here on East Broadway. You walk, it's like a quarter of a block. You turn the corner, it's Canal Street. 33 Canal Street was Otsar Sfarim. It was exactly a 2-3 minute walk, if not 2 minutes, from MTJ. Reb David Feinstein had lunch every day in back of Otsar Sfarim with Yankele Goldman, Zeichet Tzadik Levracha, who was the owner of Otsar Sfarim. He inherited from his father, was a Gerer Chassid. Yankele was a Torah V'das boy. He's in the early 40s. He volunteered. He fought in World War II, was a hero, came back and took over his father. I still remember his father. And all Reb David had to ask of Yankele, because they had just republished the Malamed Lahoil in America. All he said is, do me a favor, let me have the Malamed Lahoil revising the Tata. I want to show it to my father. Reb Moshe could have seen it in a second flat. But Reb Moshe was like the Rav. The Rav too, when a Talmud, I have it on tape, when at the Yachai Keller in Boston, a Talmud threw at the Rav, the Malamed Lahoil, the Rav, impossible, Kenish sign, wiped the floor. Okay? That's Reb Moshe, that's the Rav. Those are the Lithuanians. They paskin with lumdus. We'll come back to this next year when I deal with finding Be'ezrat Hashem, on finding new manuscripts. What influence does that have halachically? You'll see the same attitude comes up with the Litvakin. When you take the Sfardim, they cite everything. Rav Ovadia is a walking encyclopedia. You open up a tshuva of Rav Ovadia, it's like opening up a computer. You're overwhelmed. You can't believe how much the man knows and how he puts it together. But he looks at everything. He sees everything. The Hungarian poskim was somewhat like the Svatek poskim. They put everything together. They didn't just take a certain stance, a certain point of view, but they looked and saw what other poskim had to say. So you'll see here, he deals with other poskim, and the Hungarians, there was a certain tendency lahachmir. You see, the Litvisha, you can't characterize them. Whatever they thought, that's it. They could be machmir, they could be mekil. The minute they reached the conclusion, no one in the world could budge them. The Svadaga poskim always had a tendency lahakel koach da teira adif, and if they found achronim, even if the sfara was not exactly the sfara they began with, but they found many achronim, took a lenient position, the svadim would be lenient, as Rav Ovadia's reputation is well known. The Hungarians, it's the Chatam Sofer's territory. It's a land where they were fighting the reform, and they were machmir many times. So here, the Minchat Yitzchak gets involved. They're not left living in their final destination. They're still in Memphis, Tennessee. Let's say they're going in Aliyah. So Kol Zman, they're not in their own home and their own final destination. She can be machmir like her husband, but he doesn't feel she can be mekil yet. The kulas of eating rice on Pesach, that will only come when they're in Yerushalayim, when they're in their new home. Now, I don't know, I'm intensely thinking, we can argue, we can see it a different way. Either she's part of his domicile or not. Marriage means Makam Shinogu, you're taking on a husband, you're taking on a new lifestyle. But you see, take a look what he paskins with Yontif Sheni. And he takes that a little further, and he paskins lahalacha, that it's better the chumriz, if let's say glat kosher, now she has to eat glat kosher. But the kulat of rice, wait till she gets to Israel, till she gets to his community. Now, one more thought from his tshuva, which is halacha lemaisa. When a man is makabel Shabbos early, we all know during the summer we have early minyanim. At the Kotel, and perhaps at some other shuls in Yerushalayim, they're early minyanim all year, and I get a lot of nasty comments that during the summer I daven early, I have a big minyan, and during the winter I'm not there. And my minyan is so big already that even in the winter it continues. And the truth is I would like to daven early, but it's just, it means leaving my house for the kotel at 2 o'clock, 2:30, and it's too hot on my wife, etc. I can understand it. But let me tell you a little story. I'm walking back from the kotel during the summer when I daven early. I'm walking with two grandsons. And one of the grandsons, David Pardo, daven shakras with him this morning. And while I'm walking with them, a car stopped, and it's a Talmud. He says, Rebbe, you taught us a Rashba. Jump in, I'll give you a lift home. And I can tell you exactly where this happened. It happened right at the foot of Rehov Agron. You know, we have that tremendous hill to walk up. Could have saved the whole hill. Could have been home in 5 minutes. Now, while it's the Rashba, the Rashba raises the question, after someone was Makabel Shabbos, a woman lit candles, she was Makabelet Shabbat. It's a half hour before sunset. And she realizes she didn't turn the oven on. Can she ask her next door neighbor to turn the oven on for you? You follow me? So the Rashba, it's brought down by the Ramah as well. The Ramah quotes the Rashba, it's a Chivat Rashba, that she absolutely can ask her neighbor. Because for a Jew, there's no concept of Amira La'akam. It's not like you're asking a guy to do work for you. A Jew is only measured by one question. Is it Shabbos for him or isn't it? Can he do it or can't he? If he can do it, he can do it for you. So my student can stop and give us a lift. Fine. I didn't take the lift. I said, we're walking. Don't have to start explaining to young kids, lumdas. But I think he was kibitzing, but I told him I appreciate it, and halachically he's correct. Now, let me ask a different question. husband goes to shul lekabel Shabbat. When does the wife light candles? And here a lot of people don't realize this, that when a husband who sets the tone in the house on this level is mekabel Shabbat, it obligates his wife as well. And this is why every Thursday I write down for my wife what time we're leaving, because she always drives me to the Manila Mall today, which is a tremendous improvement on how to go to the Kotel. It's mamish fabulous. And I always write down what time she should light candles. And when it's early, I always write down what the plug is, and I tell her to wait 5 minutes after the plug and light candles, because that's before we've reached Ms. Mishili Yom HaShabbat. I haven't been the Kabul Shabbat yet, and Lachatkila, certainly, even though Rav Asher Weiss came out with the Kula, you have to light candles after the plug HaMincha. Fine. No, let me ask a different question. If we have a minyan of 100 people at the Kotel, and there are two minyanim between us, let's say 125 people, being Makabu Shabbos early, why doesn't that obligate the rest of the Jewish people in Jerusalem? Lo titgodedim. And here too, he brings down Tshuvat, that every community is a kehila unto itself. They want to be Makabu Shabbos early, it obligates that community. It does not impact upon the next community. And it's all part of one city. In other words, once again, it's the same thought that there's no lotit godadu. You can have 50 shuls next to each other. Each one has a different time framework for Kabbalah Shabbat. So you know something? I thought of that. They would say the same thing, that each minyan is its own kehila. You follow? And therefore he says, and when it comes to Sfadim and Ashkenazim marrying and different kehilat and different shuls, there's no problem, because each kehila is its own separate unit. And as I said last week, this is basic revolutionary, I have to tell you, because look what it does. You see, the whole Lotit Godadu, I spoke about it last week. Basically, it has nothing to do with different communities. It has to do with cutting your body in anger and anguish. Someone died, you're angry, you're mad. And we have religions who do that. The way we have pictures, people all bloody. That's terrible. What religions in the world? And this is in the year 2012. And you have all types of moronic things. But we have an Issa D'Oraita. In addition, it's evidently a secondary concept from the Pasuk, Lo Tidgodedu Lo Tasu Agudat Agudat, the Gemara in Yevamot. But that concept is very limited. The only time I would see a problem is, for the sake of argument, with the tefillin, I don't have a solution. If at 1 million Chalamai people are putting on and people are not, everyone sees it. Let's say Leil Pesach. Do you say Hallel? Don't you say Hallel? So even those who don't say Hallel, but no one knows you're not saying Hallel, you hold the city, you hold the safe in front of you. I don't think there'd be Lotit Godadu. But with tefillin, I don't find a solution. I don't find a solution. Mainly with Matzai Shabbos, this one keeps 42 minutes, 46 minutes, 72 minutes, 96 minutes. No, it's Shevi Al-Kasa. There's no action that creates a problem. Anyway, it's a fascinating question. But the Minchat Yitzchak is 100% like all the Achronim. We can have thousands of different kehilot, even if they're 1 minute away from each other. And you know, with the Shtiblach in Katamon, the Shtiblach in Yerushalayim, the Shtiblach in Bnei Brak, the army shuls, the minhag changes with each minion. It depends on the Baal Tefillah. I've told you more than once, you never know what Nusach is going to daven. And the only way you can justify it is that each minion is its own kehillah at that moment. And the truth is, We have no other solution. It's an ingathering of the exiles. When, you know, you live in Israel, you live here in a bubble. But, you know, if you walk along the streets of Yerushalayim, of Haifa, of Tel Aviv, and Beersheba, and Beit Shean, and you look at the different Jews that are here, it's a miracle that we get along, that we can survive. We have plenty of problems with extremists. But look where we come from. Look what we look like. Look at the difference in outlook, the difference in background, the difference in religious observance, the difference in how we daven Nisach HaTfilah. And yet, Baruch Hashem, a miracle is happening here, and there's a real kibbutz galuyot. And you can't force it. In other words, to try what Rav Gorin did of the Nisach Achid, it fell flat in its face. You cannot force it. And you have to understand that people are attached. We are Ashkenazim. I have to say, Ashkenazim prayer is not our forte. I have to admit it. I come from a Litvish background, YU, Lakewood. Our forte was learning. I can tell you when I learned in Lakewood, I can mention the name. It's Rabbi Tendler's younger brother. I believe later he goes to Baltimore. He's anyone here from Baltimore, what role he plays in the Greater New Israel community. And you should know that Rabbi Aaron Cutler once called him over. I believe it was him. Maybe it was his chavruta. But it was a terrific story in Lakewood that Rabbi Aaron said, if Mena has been states Shmonesrei too long, it's my opinion that you're standing Shmonesrei too long. You understand? This is a literature approach. I can't believe a Hasidic Rebbe, a Rushin, or the Rushin of the Rebbeim, didn't daven with the Kahal. There was two mechitzot in the Rishon Shul. There was it was an Eintracht Fafrayim. There was a women's gallery, and there was a separate mechitzah where the Rebbe davened. This is all a version. They daven with such kavana with that they say if you would see the Rebbe davening from the Rishon dynasty, that it would burn you up alive. This is what? No, that already, that forte is davening. The Sfardim loved to daven. Eitot HaMizrach loved to daven. Have you davened with them? Have you seen? They say every word. They sing. They're happy. I can tell you in Kisaria, there's one shul, basically. And the Nisach there has to satisfy everyone. Now, by Dov Kaplan, who's now in England, which I view as unfortunate for the Jewish people, But he organized that shul, and the first part of davening is totally, till they reach Musaf, it's totally a Eidot HaMizrach. And I don't know, I can blow my brains out. I want to learn, I want to get back to the Gemara, and they're saying every word, and they're singing, and they're enjoying, and I don't even know how from they are. But you should see the feeling. So these are Eidot HaMizrach, and you put us all together. So you have to allow room, you have to allow breathing space. And I have to say that in Israel, at least in the Shtiblach and Katamon, I see a minyan all the a miracle all the time. There can be four minyanim going at once, and each minyan is davening with a different nusach. And it's no different than BM, than I'm saying BMT, it's no different than Torah Shraga and the Kolel with Chutz Laretz in one room, and right next to it, it's Kedushat Eretz Yisrael. And this is the reality. A day will come when we'll all be one, but it's not in the foreseeable future. Now, I want to go one step further with the Minchat Yitzchak, and I want to take a question that it's unbelievable, this question, and it happens more than once. Let's begin with the simple halacha in the Shulchan Aruch. I'm quoting from Hilchot Pesach, Siman Tav Tzadi Gimel, Sif Bet. Okay? No, no Agim. Shalolis tapead lag boma. Sha'amrim sha'az pasku me lamut. Sphira comes in. We don't shave. 33 days. What do you mean? We can't shave until lag boma? What does that mean exactly? Rabbi Akiva's students died. They died for 33 days. What happened to Lag BaOmer? They didn't die. They died less. The plague ended. And here you have the psak of the Shulchan Aruch. Ve'ein lehistaper ad yom lamedalad baboker. Have you ever met a Sephardic individual? Someone following the Shulchan Aruch, Edot HaMizrach? They don't stress Lag BaOmer. They stress Lad BaOmer. You cannot shave, cannot take a haircut until the 34th day in the morning. Okay? And that's the Shulchan Aruch. And the Mishnah Berurah explains, you look right down into the Mishnah Berurah, that you need 33 complete days, and the truth is, some even died on the 34th day, but that day, because the plague was quieting and down, we're not so machmir, so we only don't take a haircut at night, we take a haircut in the morning. She'omrim sh'oz pasku v'yaf, the gam b'yom lamed dalet meitu. But that's why at night they don't shave, but in the morning you're allowed. Wow. Look at the Ramah. Ramah comes along, umedinat elu eino hagin tedvarav. We don't follow the Shulchan Aruch, ela mistabrim b'yom lamed gimel. We take a haircut on the 33rd day. Umar bimbo ksat simcha v'yein omrim bo tachanun v'ein l'chistaper ad lamed gimel b'yatzmo v'lo mi b'erev. And why? Because what does it mean? Lag BaOmer, that's when the plague stopped, but some people still died, so we have ksat avelut. When it comes to Avelut, lo aleinu, if you've ever sat Shiva, what happens on the seventh day? You sit at night, the morning davening, you sit down after davening, you take Nicham Avelim, and you get up and you walk away, Shiva is over. Miksat Hayom, help me out, Kukulo, right? That is the halacha. Boy, I gotta say, you guys must be learning around the clock. Never. Moshe, will you see to it next time? Tell their wives to see to it. They get to bed a little earlier. Got it? Okay? Okay. But don't wake them up. Baruch Hashem. Gentlemen, Lag BaOmer and Lag BaOmer, we have a real problem here. Oh my gosh. Now, you just think for a minute. What do you do if there's a mixed marriage? What do you do if there's a mixed marriage? And the wedding was set for Lag BaOmer, the afternoon. And one part of the wedding, Asfatim, who can't do anything until Lag BaOmer. What a story. And here you have it. Buenos Aires, Argentina. The year 1965, quoting from the Mitzvot Yitzchak, Chelek Dalet, Siman Pei Dalet. And you're talking South America. South America already, there was a tremendous amount of inter-ethnic marriage, for obvious reasons. Well, the girl is Ashkenazia, and the boy is a Sfardi. And the question comes to the Minchat Yitzchak, what to do? And listen to the question. First of all, it's interesting. He writes, Hineni bezeh ben gavra legavra berov hatidah lifnei zman bedikat chometz lashival shelato. He's writing to the Rav of Kahal Achdut Yisrael in Buenos Aires, Argentina, and his Hebrew is beautiful. What does it mean, Begafra Legafra? Before Pesach, endless people are bothering the rabbi. Mechirat Chametz, I don't have to tell you what goes on before Pesach. Shailas, kashering, how to prepare the house. Moshe, believe me, the last person doesn't leave your house Moshe Lester until it's very, very late. So he's as busy as can be, but he says, let me answer, because I see your question is very pressing. In your city, Buenos Aires, there are many Sfardim Syrians, and one of the Syrians wants to marry a Na'ara Ashkenazia on Lag Ba'Omer HaBoaleinu L'Tova. Ulam Da'aka, this is the problem, that the Sfardim only make marriages after the 33rd day. And he wants to get married on the 34th day. At the very least, he's willing to compromise and perhaps get married at the night, which is part of the 34th day. But we, the Ashkenazim, make weddings on Lag BaOmer itself. And could be we can make a compromise that on the 33rd day on Lag BaOmer, right before nightfall, when it's still day, we could make the wedding ceremony and the Sudah, we will begin at night. And you understand what the compromise, what they're trying to propose here, what the rabbi writing to the Minchat Yitzchak says, I have this tremendous problem, this tremendous clash. The Ashkenaziyah's family wants the wedding on Lag BaOmer. They don't know of Lag BaOmer. Lehefek, you all know with the Ashkenazim, they're two different minhagim. Sometimes they observe the first 33 days, or others begin with Rosh Chodesh and observe the next 33 days. It could very well be, according to their minhag, for an Ashkenazi, he's not allowed to get married on Lag BaOmer, on the 34th day. And the rabbi Nebuch has gone out of his mind. What he proposes is, let the chuppah kedushin be by day, and the meal should begin at night. And the rabbi says, I thought of the solution, but afterwards I saw, and he quotes an earlier volume of the Minchat Yitzchak, where you quote a certain sefer, and he says the sefer is not available in Argentina, that you, this sefer says that even where they began the meal on, the wedding was on the 33rd day, Sfardim can still not participate. And he says, I don't know what to do. On the other hand, I saw in the sefer Mo'odim LaHalacha, Rav Shlomo Yosef Zevin, we've referred to that sefer many times, and from what he wrote, it would seem that it would be permissible as long as the wedding is on Lag BaOmer, the meal is at night, the Sfardim can participate. Hineni b'mevucha gedola, I am very confused. V'nafshi b'shelati eich lia'et sotam, and my soul is in my hands. How do I give them advice? And I can't tell them to delay the wedding. It will be an abrogation of procreation. It's the first marriage. And I will be very thankful to you if you can advise me. And he says it is very urgent because they want to print the invitations and rent the hall, etc. Now you see, what do you see from this? This is the rabbinate. Nebuch, the rabbi, is under pressure from the Balabatim. You also see that the Balabatim are adamant. In other words, each one is stuck in his own mold, which I can understand. He understands Lag BaOmer. The Sfardim understand Lag BaOmer. How do you reach a compromise? How do you work it out? And the poor rabbi is caught in the middle. And here they want to print invitations. They want to rent the hall. And what do you do? And he goes into all the tshuva dealing with it. And he absolutely reaches the conclusion that the Sfardim cannot get married on Lag BaOmer. He understands their problem. He understands that it is prohibited. But nevertheless, because of the pressing circumstances here, he agrees with the rabbi's solution that if you can arrange that only the chuppah is on Lag BaOmer and the meal is at night, then there's ample room that the Sfardim can attend, they can come to the Suda, the Ashkenazim can attend, because once the Simcha began on Lag BaOmer and it carries through to the night, there are many Achronim who are Mekiel. And he agrees with the rabbi's solution. But then he goes in that he quotes something that people have a minhag that if they do something wrong at a time of Avelut, it's not a Siman Tov. He quotes the Shvut Yaakov. What does it mean, not a Siman Tov? You see, at a time of Avelut, God have mercy, you lose a parent. Don't want to say anything else. It's a very emotional, difficult, trying period. And to a certain degree, if you see something, I don't want to use the word superstitious, but, you know, when something goes wrong, you're worried something else will go wrong. You're worried the whole deck of cards will fall in. And there are people who... He quotes the Shvut Yaakov here. He quotes the Tshuva from the Shvut Yaakov. And he says that here with the Sfardim, they perhaps will be worried that it's a Simin Ra. How can you be Mekil? And even though the Ashkenazim are, but we aren't, and it's a time of mourning, and you can understand where they might feel awkward. But he says it must be explained to them that you don't want to delay the wedding. It's a first marriage. If you delay the wedding, they're going to wind up getting married after Shavuot or right before Shavuot. And this, you shouldn't worry about a Siman Ra. You are having the wedding now, L'shem Shamayim. You are having it that the couple can marry, that the couple can take on a marital relationship, that a child should be born, and they shouldn't worry about a Siman Ra. And he says, the Seder should be like this. The chuppah, this is what he paskens lahalacha. The chuppah by day, start the Suda with the Chatan V'Kala by day, and finish it at night. And the Sfardim can certainly be at the chuppah as long as you don't have real music there. And afterwards, even though the Suda began by day and the Ashkenazim already are participating, the Sfardim can join the Suda the minute there is nightfall. And he says, this would appear to me to be the best solution. I repeat, wedding by day. Finish the chuppah 20 minutes before sunset. Wash with the chatan v'kala. Sit down to the meal. The Ashkenazim can sit down already. A few minutes later, you'll daven maariv. Then the Sfardim can join. And that way, everyone will feel at ease and feel at home. But the Minchat Yitzchak says, and this is beautiful, nevertheless, halacha lema'aseh, I don't feel I can paskin because I don't really know the minhagim of the Sfardim. And he says, I would like to hear what a great Sfardic posek would have to be. And then he says, he opened up the Abia Omer Rav Ovadia Yosef, and he saw that Rav Ovadia discusses this problem. And first of all, he quotes Rav Ovadia that, and this is well known, in two Rav Ovadia became chief rabbi of Tel Aviv. Everyone was getting married on Lag BaOmer. The Ashkenazim stepped all over the Sfardim. Sfardim had no pride, no self-respect. Sfardim had been swept away by the Mapai, by the absorption, by all they went through here. And willy-nilly, they were forced into Ashkenazic hold. And when Rav Ovadia became chief rabbi of Tel Aviv, he made it clear to the Department of Marriage, Ashkenazim can get married on Lag BaOmer, Sfardim, Edot HaMizrach, have to wait one more day. And he said, Minhagei Yisrael are so important, how can we change them? And Rav Ovadia stood very firmly, and he advises the individual who's asking the question, you must also consult Rav Ovadia Yosef. And Rav Ovadia Yosef agrees with the psak of the Minchat Yitzchak. And he, and the Minchat Yitzchak writes so beautifully, V'yachol atzil afanav d'vareinu hanal, I give you permission to show Rav Ovadia Yosef this tshuva. V'yim yaskim lehetera, and if he will agree lahatir, bevadai ken yakum, you can do exactly as we say if he agrees with us. Bubiyoter tzerich lichashev bezeh bizmanenu shahadar parutz v'ein liten yad lahakel b'minhagei Yisrael ashe yisodatam v'harare kodesh. And of course he's saying, we're living at a time, I need not tell you how many people are observant, how many people care, how many people are medantic in mitzvah, how many people are pedantic. And the Minchat Yitzchak says, we cannot be lenient in these issues unless it is a valid psak. We cannot open the floodgate of leniency and laughing at minhagim, and you know, as Sfadi will say, what's the big difference, Lag BaOmer, Lag BaOmer, and Ashkenazi will say, why does it matter? And Rav Weiss insists you have to ask Rav Ovadia, and if he will agree, it will be halacha lema'aseh. And he says it's a siman tov, the Sfadim don't have to worry. Lag BaOmer is a different day than the first 32 days of mourning. Even if the Sfadim don't accept it, or the Ashkenazim do, avo the ishtanei mishal yemei ha'omer letivuta, it is a different day, it is a good day, af l'bnei Sfad, even to the b'nei Sfad. Al-kein yesh ladin b'zeli eit ha-tzarech k'chol hanal. And he says, this is why I paskind, it's a need, they want to get married, the invitations, the hall, it's two different couples, two different communities, two different minhagim, v'hinu ne'e b'zeh doresh shlom torato v'chotein b'chol chatmei brachat Yitzchak Yaakov Weiss. Now, believe it or not, I found where Rav Ovadia agrees with the Minchat Yitzchak. It's in writing. You have to know where to find it. I'll show it to you next week, Be'ezrat Hashem. I'll show it to you next week. I want to quote it. It's not so simple a page. It's, one second. Where do I have it? One second. Here it is. Here it is. It's, you want to see Rav Ovadia's... You have to know where to find it. It's a lo pashut, because it's not a tshuva. It's a hosafa. Here it is. Yabia Omer, Chelek Hamishi, in very back where it says, Tikunim, Hosafot Umiluim, page Shin Mem Tet. And I'll show it to you next week. It's a very fascinating addendum, and then we'll get into Rav Avadya himself, and you'll see this issue catch fire as we come into the modern poskim. So to reiterate,
among Ashkenazim,
yeah,
don't they have weddings on Erev Lag BaOmer?
Yeah, I've seen it, and I don't understand it. I don't know what to answer you. La halacha, I've seen it. And I don't know what to answer you. If it's on Ratzit, or they allow it, or they have a mixat talayla, I don't understand. I understand. No, I understand. There has to be a reason why they're allowed. It could be mixat hayom kakulo, even the nighttime. There are akonim who say that about avelit. If you say that about avelit, you can say it about Lag BaOmer. But you see, there's a big problem. What about people who don't shave? So are they allowed to shave? I mean, I shave on Fridays. We grew up in America. We shaved the Lag BaOmer. Fine, that was a different story, but it was a different era. But all right, I can't change it. For me, it's hard enough not to shave and only shave on Fridays. But I have to do it out of respect to where I'm living, and my grandchildren. Many of them don't shave at all. So their grandfather at least has to be partially from. but how do you shave to go to the wedding? You understand? I mean, I don't know. And yet you're right. I've seen it. Most people, the weddings are motzei Lag BaOmer. In other words, it's in the afternoon going into the next night, which already the yesh makom lahakel. Okay, to reiterate, check it out. Find out. You were in RCA. You were in the rabbinate. Find out what it's based upon. Okay, what did we do today? We dealt with the Minchat Yitzchak. Danny, you can call this shir inter-ethnic marriage in Argentina. Okay? We dealt with the Minchat Yitzchak, and very fascinating, the man observing one day Yentif, the woman observing 2 days Yentif, and the man not being able to say Yudchet Brachat in her presence. That really is the catch. The second shaila, of course, is halacha lemaisa, and a fascinating shaila with inter-ethnic marriage. How do you solve the problem that both the Ashkenazim and the Sfardim can eat at the same meal? And I would imagine in Flatbush, anyone here from Flatbush? I would imagine in Flatbush this problem comes up. In other words, I can envision this problem in Flatbush. There's also inter-ethnic marriage, and it's not just inter-ethnic marriage, but let's say you have a Sephardic marriage and Ashkenazim are invited, or you have an Ashkenazic marriage and Sephardim are invited. How do they solve it? All right, I'm sure in Flatbush they've reached the solution, but... Not a question of Mahadrin. On Lag BaOmer, the Sephardim can't eat at the wedding and the Ashkenazim can't eat Lag BaOmer if they hold the last 33 days. But I'm sure there is a tshuva of Rav Moshe that a Rav can be Masada Kedushin regardless of what his minig is, you can go to a wedding even if you hold the first 33 but it's before Rosh Chodesh. I believe there's a tshuva of Rav Moshe. So maybe they solved it along those lines. Anyway, give me 1 second. This is from the Young Israel of Century City. Once again, it's unbelievable what Hollywood can do. They're right adjacent to Hollywood. A good deal of the Kehila works in Hollywood. It's amazing what they can do for their announcement of their lectures and adult education for the year. It's really a winner, and I'm very proud because in this year's group I have a number of students who are appearing as scholars and residents. If anyone wants it, you're welcome to it. If anyone is interested in the old Mir Yeshiva, this is a biography of Reverend Philip Berliner, who wound up in Australia. This is his son, who perpetuates the father's memory, but it's a very nice memoir of what Mir was like and how they got out and what it was like in Australia. It's a sad story because he died young, and as I've said many times, Hitler killed 6 million and shortened the lives and tortured the lives of another 5 million. If anyone is interested in American Jewish history, a Talmud of mine via the website visited an old community and he found an old shul, very, very fascinating, in Montana, and a picture of what used to be, that was a radio. You don't remember that. And that radio I remember very well, because my father was sitting in the, my first memory of life is my father sitting in the living room listening to the radio that looked exactly like that. And December 7th, 1941, the day that Katzav goes to jail, is also the day that my father yelled to my mother, should live and be well, "Jenny, Jenny, we're at war, we're at war." It was, no, you tell me what happened on December 7th, 1941, Pearl Harbor. So it's interesting pictures. Here's the shul, and here's a picture of one of the balabatim, of one of the founders of the shul, and here he is in Montana. They asked him to look at the sparim they have. They want to give it away, and he found a very fascinating situation. One second. Here's a CD on Shabbos. If anyone is interested, take it. I want your opinion. It's in Hebrew, and I feel it's not bad. It's both popular, but there are moments of depth to it as well. They were giving these out free all over Israel. It's L'Karev Yehudim to Shabbos. Very nice. The person who speaks, very, very good. Excellent. And finally, I want Chaim Bash to look at this by David Bash. See if this is a relative. These are the two volumes that he wants to prove that Shakespeare is Jewish. Follow? Gentlemen and lady, I wouldn't miss tomorrow morning's shiur. No, I don't know. Let me know your opinion. I wouldn't miss tomorrow's shiur for all the rice in China. We are in the heart of the Great Israel. That gentleman leaving, are you in the shiur? Do you want to be registered? Yes? So here, registered, you get credits of whatever you need. Why, you will give you smicha, and part of the credits are right here. What's your first name?
Steven.
How do you?